Welcome to Minority Corner, where we take an introspective look at the world through an intersectional lens. I'm James, he, him. I'm a queer political activist, actor, comedian, self-proclaimed sexy blurred. That's a black nerd. And each week, I'm joined in the corner by other fabulous minorities and some allies tackling the news, pop culture, politics, media, entertainment, and history with a little self-care, self-love sprinkled throughout, all for our own personal and collective empowerment. It's an all-new Minority Corner, and it is a blast from my past. My old college buddy, Julia, is here. She is a BIPOC writer, TV junkie, queer civil servant, working in affordable housing for the city of Los Angeles. All about that black girl magic. She's a fellow blur. Just really excited to have her here. It's Juneteenth, and we're here to celebrate. Then it looks like Gossip Girl is back, and Julia, as a fan of the original, has some notes on, is this new, more inclusive Gossip Girl a good way to go, or is it too little, too late? And then we have to talk about In the Heights, the movie musical based on the Broadway being hit with the colorism scandal. We dive into that, our thoughts, our reactions, and on the heels of that, we talk about 8 historic Afro-Latinos that we are here to celebrate, since In the Heights seems to have ignored our Afro-Latinos. So we gonna celebrate you here on Minority Corner, because that's what we do. And then Julia takes us through the Real Housewives of New York, which, if you didn't know, I sure didn't, they have a black housewife. She is breaking glass ceilings on that show. And we dive into that, what it means, and her journeys and struggle on that show. I might watch now. Or maybe Julia watches so we don't have to. Anyways, all this and so much more on a brand new Minority Corner. It's time to learn, laugh, and play. Here we are, Julia Hardy. Welcome to the show. Oh my goddess. Oh my goddess.
Hi. How are you, James?
Looking at you just brings me so much joy. It's been a long time coming. I can't believe it's taken 307 episodes. Yeah. I feel like we've been talking about getting you on the show.
I know. I was
for
like
so long.
But now you're scraping the bottom of the
barrel. Like, who else we got? You know that Julia over there.
Let me go through the Rolodex.
Oh, God. We're like Grey's Anatomy season 17. What else we doing? There was a hurricane and everyone's dying. No, this is a great gift. The stars finally aligned to get you on the show. And now, Julia, now that you're on the show, do that joke for everybody. You know, tell them that joke.
I had a feeling.
Okay, everybody, brace yourself. Julia has a joke. It's so good. I'm going to hype it up. It is such a good joke. Do it for everybody. Tell them the joke.
Okay. Okay. So this is actually kind of a visual joke.
Even better. That's just even better.
And you know a joke is good. It's good when it starts with a disclaimer, right?
All right. So imagine you're hanging out with Julia.
What?
And she walks up and tells you the story.
All right. You're hanging out with me. And I stand up at a party and I'm like, why do kids have dimples?
I don't know.
Because before they were born, the mom and dad would have sex and the penis would poke the baby on each cheek. But okay, so, it doesn't really translate to radio.
No, because
there's this whole like miming of like me poking, because I have dimples, like me poking myself, like, oh, like a little baby asleep in the womb.
Okay, I love the joke, and thank you for hearing me, because I used to always back in college, make Julia tell this joke. I thought it was so hilarious, and I would hype it up.
I'm sure it was more eloquent back then.
You were so committed to being worse? The baby getting hit by the dimples. I could see you being the little fetus just getting dick punched in the face.
It's kind of, it's pretty,
Anyways.
the ultimate dick.
It really is.
A permanent
dick spot. Yeah, yeah. Well, never looked cuter with those dimples. So we know what happened. You'll never look at someone with dimples the same ever again.
No, that is true.
On a, what's the reverse of a lighter note? On a darker note? Is that racist?
Yes.
Okay.
Why is dark bad?
Okay, speak truth on it. And because I just know how people be thinking about it. All right, coming in with the questions already.
On a darker note.
On a darker note, truthful note, or realist or a realism note, or reflectional note. So just to highlight what is, so you're listening to this on Friday. Happy Juneteenth, or I don't know if it's a happy. Yeah, I will say happy Juneteenth because we are celebrating the last day that America finally was like, we will not have legalized slavery in this country. Although there's still forms in the prisons and things like that. But the last time our people were officially legally, you know, and enslaved there. So June 19th, we've done episodes on it before in Minority Corner. We're not going to celebrate it. Not that we're not going to celebrate it too much. We're not going to talk about it too much because it's already plenty of works in the catacombs. But also known as Freedom Day, Jubilee Day, Liberation. I will say the one thing that's really fucked up about Juneteenth is that, like, so it was on June 19th, 1865, that word finally reached the Texas slaves that, like, oh, yeah, we're not doing that slavery thing anymore. Mind you, it was the Emancipation Proclamation was passed in 1863. So it, like, took 2 years to stop the slavery. So, you know, but happy Juneteenth. Woo!
Yeah.
Do you think that this will, so this just actually happened. So my job, we actually started last year in the wake of the murder of George Floyd. We started acknowledging Juneteenth as a paid company holiday. And so it is again this year as well. Right. And this just in, hot off the Twitter presses, the Senate unanimously passed a bill making Juneteenth a federal holiday. Yeah.
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 I knew it was coming, but
I'm actually a little
out loud.
I'm a little surprised because of, you know, this Senate. I mean, I'm surprised. What's that? Joe Manchin was okay with that. I feel like he likes people being a little miserable. So I'm surprised. Shocked.
Yeah, it is a little surprising, but I mean, I think it's been in the works for a while.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that we will. It's sort of like, I feel like it's sort of like gay pride. We will know that Juneteenth has, like, officially made it as, like, a national holiday when you turn on the TV and they're like, this weekend, run down to Mattress Discounters for the Juneteenth sale.
That's when we made it. When we get sales.
When capitalism has fully embraced us, like, oh, I got to head down to Macy's for that Juneteenth sale. It's just, I mean, again, it's just weird. That's a weird one. Oh, Lord. In the current trends of, like, we're rebooting things, but we're doing it updated. Gossip Girl XOXO. Gossip Girl.
Gossip Girl here.
I got some boss up for you. They should actually call this show Boss Up Girl because there's a lot of melanin popping up in this series. So. Right? HBO Max is doing Gossip Girl. It's revived it. Kristen Bell, she's back to do her XOXO Gossip Girl character. I watched the trailer and I was really stoked because it looks like there is, like, diversity in New York City, which, yes, there should be that. It looks diversity. It looks like there's queer characters, trans characters. I probably would not have paid this a single mind because I didn't actually watch, like, the original Gossip Girl. I think I just was like, because I watched 90210, which is not any better, but I was 13, and, you know, when something captures your heart at that age, and so anything that came afterwards, I'm like, I don't have time for this, I can't do this. But so similarly, I was, like, not interested in the Sex and the City revival until they were like, and there's, like, a non-binary queer character. I'm like, oh, who's a podcaster? I'm like, okay, you're speaking my language. And, like, when they keep reviving these things that seem more, I would have not paid attention to these things. What are your thoughts as a Gossip Girl fan? What are you thinking?
Well, I am thinking it's about time. And this is something I'm noticing in a lot of shows that are set in New York. Like, for example, Girls, Friends, Sex and the City. Like, you know, So this is great. I'm very happy that they are being more inclusive. Part of me feels like it's too little too late, but you know, it mm-hmm. has been a long time coming, and I have a very tortured relationship with Gossip Girl because I was obsessed with it. And
didn't this come out when we were in college?
I think it came out like a little after I graduated college. So I didn't. Okay. No. But listen, this is me.
Fair. I mean, you're not on trial. You're not on trial. But I just want to add the numbers of like, we were not the target demographic for this show.
I was old for the show.
Fair. And okay. I mean, to be fair, I watched Glee. I watched the first 4.5 seasons of Glee, so 5. But and I wasn't the demographic for that, but you know.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Part of it. Maybe it's because there is a certain nostalgia factor that happens after a certain age. You're like, oh, to be in high school again.
I think that I have just always been obsessed with teen shows. Like you. And fair. You know, a lot of it has been, I don't know if I really.
Okay, calling me out. Like you, James. It's true. But I do. I'm much more picky about them these days.
Me too.
Generation is dope on HBO Max. Highly recommend.
Good. Sex Education on Netflix is really good too.
Ooh, and really Euphoria. Good. I will say that a lot of these shows about teens on HBO. And I'm like, who is the demographic for this? Because they're about teens, and these teens are doing like, it's like titties and there's dicks and they're having sex. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, but I'm an adult.
There was a lot of dick in Euphoria.
Yeah. And same and Generation was the same way. It's like, not actually, no, Euphoria was more so titties and dicks all over the place. But I'm like, but we're adults and we're watching these teenagers, but they're actually all adults filming this.
Right. As usual.
But I don't know. But they're not like Andrea Zuckerman, 30 years old. So we've gotten better. But Gossip Girl, you like me, yes. Watch your high schooler shows.
Like you. Yeah. And they always get recommended to me and eventually I bite. So I'm not going to say what age I started watching Gossip Girl, but it was older than
I liked. Ask Gossip Girl. Gossip Girl will know. XOXO. This just in. Julia's 32 watching Gossip Girl.
And then, like, I don't know, it just became, because it gets very dark. And that's the, like, I would watch it again when I was just, like, feeling down or depressed. And I don't know, it's like some kind of, like, sick pleasure. Because the characters were so mean to each other. They were just nasty. Yeah. Like, you know, from, like, the first episode, it was just, like, these vicious teens. But I just gobbled it up. And a friend of mine, actually, she was a writer for this reboot, and the tea on that is that, you know, it's kind of reflective of the people in production, and it shows. And she really hated working there. It's like, she was like, it was like Mean Girls. It was like
really this new Gossip Girl.
And so this is for the reboot. Wow. Yeah. Well, and you know, Gossip Girl was created by was it Josh Schwartz? The same guy who did the OC. And, you know, I bit that show. You know, I watched that when I was in college. And, you know, I was like, God, this show is so white.
But that's like all there shows, kind of, you know? Was at the time.
That's all there were.
Again, why I watched all 10 seasons of 90210. It was like, I wanted my teen drama. There was nothing else at the time, which is why I will say what is refreshing is seeing, you know, this trailer for this Gossip Girl, but even like, you know, Generation and Euphoria. I'm like, oh, this is like the modern day sort of, you know, teen dramas and 90210s. And they're so much more reflective of, you know, human beings that are alive. It's diverse. It's ethnically diverse. The sexualities are diverse. There's, you know, trans characters. And so it's like, I'm excited for this newer generation because it is empowering to not have to like copy and paste yourself onto like Andrea fucking Zuckerman or something. It's like the only reference I have because I did not make it to Dawson's. I didn't make it to Dawson's Creek. I didn't make it to the OC. Because I'm so fucking loyal that my 16, 17-year-old heart, everything else, I'm like, oh, this is just a copy. Like, I couldn't do Christina. I couldn't do Well, actually, I switched to NSYNC off of Backstreet Boys. I couldn't, it was just like one or the other, right? I couldn't do anything outside of 90210. So everything else, like, I just was like, no, I already had my teen drama.
Okay, I would argue that Buffy is a teen drama.
No, Buffy is like a way of life.
It is a whole Whedonverse.
It so. Is. Rest in power, Joss yeah. Whedon's career, as we always like yes. to say. Like, oh man, you got to side out your heroes. Like, who's next? It's so sad. But yeah, you're right. I feel like it's like an action adventure dramedy, I would almost say. You know, it's almost in its own right. sort of era. A lot of carbon copies that came after that. Looking at you, Charmed. Supernatural.
Vampire Diaries.
You know, they just take that formula. Vampire Diaries. And again, how many of us has the Vampire Diaries have I seen? A zero. Because I was like, I did this already. Yeah. No.
I tried and I just couldn't. So I do have my limits. Okay. My standards are clearly lower than yours.
Listen, there's somebody on this show who's listening right now, and it's like, Julia is speaking my love language, which is Gossip yeah. Girl. And
if you ever want to talk about, yeah, teen shows,
it's yes. your new spinoff podcast.
That's my jam.
We'll have, you know, Minority Corner, like CSI, is going to have spinoffs, and you'll do Minority Corner, teen drama, you know? That's what I'll talk about. Okay, so. We would be remiss if we didn't jump into, I don't know if we call it Colorism Gate or In the Heights Gate. What seems more apropos? Colorism In the Heights Gate?
I would say yes. I think it's more colorism is something that's been coming up for me personally and family members. So it is It is broader than In the Heights. But yeah, In the Heights is definitely the topical example.
It is, yes, and it's I want to so In the Heights just came out on in your maybe you went to the theaters to see it. Jealous. I sat home at HBO sat at home watching it through HBO. The movie was supposed to come out a year ago, but the Ponta replay just affected everything, and so there was like no movies being played because of the pandemic. And so we sat on this, like, been waiting for this movie. The trailer already makes me cry. This was the first Broadway musical I ever saw on Broadway. This was like the first one. I was in New York. I was like 25, and I was like, it was the thing that I said, I'm gonna come to New York because I could see myself on Broadway, because there were Black and brown folks that look like me doing hip hop dance. They're rapping and singing. And I was like, this is amazing. I'm coming here. So this musical has a special place in my heart. Written by Lin-Manuel Miranda, follows a Caribbean. It takes place in Washington Heights. And it follows a Caribbean. It pretty much is like the Caribbean diaspora community in New York City. So, like, you know, it's everybody that makes up, you know, the Caribbean. It's, you know, the Caribbean. It's Central America, South America. It's all that. I lived in West Harlem, like 134th Street. And so if you go up to like 10, 15 more blocks, you're up in like Washington Heights. I think like 150th Street. I don't know. It's been a while, folks. So I know what that neighborhood, I know what it looks like. And I have to say, and I was seeing flashes already of, like, you know, different articles who, because sometimes, like, I know how people just like to hate on things sometimes, right? And sometimes I'm like, you know, we do it not, or bring, I don't know. Sometimes I'm just exhausted. I'm just like, I just want to enjoy something, you know? And already there was an article that was written on The Root. I just read the headline, and it says, it's by Felice Leon. So let's talk about In the Heights and the erasure of dark-skinned Afro-Latin folks, Latinx folks. And I thought, like, again, I hadn't seen the movie, and I was like, okay, come on. There's no, because I know what it looks like on Broadway, and I'm like, there's no way. There's just no way. I'm watching the movie, and I'm just like, this article was, like, right. It was right. There's a total whitewashing that even happens. So much, in fact, so one of the love interests, Vanessa, on Broadway was played by a dark skinned Afro Latina character. And then Melissa Barrera comes popping up. She's a very light skinned Latinx actress who comes up. And this movie, you can love and appreciate something and also be disappointed by it all at the same time.
Yeah. So I just watched it last night. And
you've never, have you ever heard the music before or seen anything of it?
I've heard some of the music. Some friends of mine, I've heard that it was better than Hamilton.
Blackout.
from people who saw it. Like they, you know, they were obsessed with it. They said
which
that
is
was
saying a lot because Hamilton is beloved. Yeah. So if you're like, this is even better, right. Like, oh shit, right?
Yeah. So my expectations were very high. However, just on a personal note, I love musicals. I love seeing them on Broadway. A lot of times when I see movie musicals, I'm kind of disappointed. I was very disappointed with Hairspray.
With
people,
John Travolta.
And I know people like it. I'm like, well.
Oh yeah. God,
who I'm was like? Well, you haven't seen it on Broadway.
So. That movie, he could not commit to just playing a woman. He just was like, I'm John Travolta in a dress, because then people would know that. What? Oh, you're gay? I mean, you are, but like, that's fine. Ain't nothing wrong, John. It's Pride. Yeah. Come on out in that dress.
I know. I'm waiting. But yeah, so there's just been a lot of disappointments. So I kept that in mind. I watched it, but like as soon as Usnavi started singing. Oh, sorry, Usnavi started singing, and it's like talking about being from the DR. I was like, what? He does not look like anyone I've ever seen from the Dominican Republic. Like, I went to the Dominican Republic and it was like looking in a mirror everywhere I went. Like people were like, my shade were darker and, you know.
Because it's the same island. It's Hispaniola. It's the same island of Haiti. It's the same exact island of Haiti. Haiti is the French side and the DR is the Spanish speaking side.
Yeah.
So of course they would be very of dark skin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And like, you know. I have a grandfather of like some Caribbean, like he was a mystery. We know he was somewhere around there. So who knows? Maybe I am part Dominican, but either way, I was just very shocked watching this movie. And now that you've told me, since you saw it on Broadway, I am just even more disappointed. And there were really good things about it. Like I love Anthony Ramos. I think he's so cute. I loved him in, that Spike Lee, She's Gotta Have It TV show on Netflix.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he is incredibly, like, I mean, he can get it. It's been a long pandemic, so I'm just like, oh, man, he can get it. For sure, yeah. But, like, even though...
Yeah, and Leslie Grace can get it, too. And, she is Dominican, but she is so light.
What is so interesting is that in the Broadway version, her character is straight up Latinx, and the plot line about her with her dad, Jimmy Smith, and her mother, who they, I don't know why, maybe Jimmy Smith's got too much money, but they just killed off her mother in this, and they made her like Dominican. She's like her mother is like, she's Afro-Latina, I think, through her mother. But it's interesting because in the musical, she's not Afro-Latina. She's straight up Latina. And there's a plot line that Jimmy Smith, her dad's character, doesn't like Benny because Benny is just black and he's not like part of the actual like community. So there's other like subplot that also happens. And I think it kind of goes to your point is that like, maybe we should just stop trying to do like movie musicals, because it's just never, Broadway is magical. And like, I like, look at the list. Like, I'll send you a link and we'll put it in the show notes, a list of like all the songs that were cut. It'll break your heart. There's so many songs that were cut from the movie, and the movie's still running at 2 hours and 20 minutes. And so you're not even getting the full experience and the full sort of story. And I will say, like, Lin-Manuel Miranda has finally come around. And because people were like kind of talking about this, and like I also want to say, because I know there are people who are listening, who are like, I finally feel so represented, and I don't want to take that away, because on so many levels, this movie is doing a lot of great stuff of showing multidimensional representations of the Latino community. It avoids stereotypes and tropes of, you know, Latinos, where they're oftentimes, you know, just presented as, you know, criminals or domestic workers. It really shows the diaspora of the Latinx community. It just then fell short with the full representation of what it means to be up in Washington Heights. And I can't help but think that this is, and everyone, like, it's weird because, like, it's like, Lin-Manuel Miranda, this is your musical. Like, yeah, you were just a producer. He also shoehorns himself into this movie because he is the Piragua guy. And in the original Broadway production, he was Usnavi, and he is aged out of it. It happens. But I want to say that, like, so, like, Lin-Manuel Miranda is, like, one of the most powerful people right now in Hollywood. And they're like, we're going to do your musical. He shoehorned himself into the movie. He's a producer. He's maybe sitting there in the casting rooms or whatnot. And this is an example of just, like, colorism in that, like, they, whether he didn't have control over or not, like, they bastardized, they went with the lighter skin actors. One of the actresses, Melissa, she was like, well, like, a lot of folks were fumbling the ball when they were first talking about this, or like, you know, well, you know, we all deserve to be represented, and let's not take away from what's happening, this, you know, this moment, you know, we'll just keep doing work for the next time. Or she was like, you know, there was, at the castings, there was like, you know, dark skinned women, there was all kinds of, you know, shades, but they just went with, like, you know, who really fit the role and who, you know, was the best part. I'm sorry, girl. I know there are some dark-skinned Afro-Latinas who can hit those notes.
And that's like the default response. I feel like I hear that in every example with casting. And, you know, I remember within my family, like, my mom's side, you know, is very mixed and what, you know, full color spectrum, like, and yeah, even like in that family text, when the Nina Simone movie had come out, there was this whole kerfuffle.
We'll get to that.
Yeah. And like, my aunt was just like vehemently defending the casting. Like, I don't see what the big deal is, you know? And like,
She seen a picture of Nina Simone and then Zoe Saldana? And look at those two pictures. Like, like, when you had to darken someone's skin, put on a prosthetic nose, and like, you know, Nina Simone was very self-conscious about her looks. Like, she did not think that she, and Zoe Saldana, like, is a very beautiful Afro-Latina actress. Like, there are other Afro-Latina stories, to the point, it's funny, does your aunt know that, like, Zoe Saldana has finally since apologized for playing that
like
part?
We had to squash that topic because
Zoe Saldana has since maybe that's a fun one you just bring up. Maybe just pretend, just have your phone out and be like, oh, I just got a tweet. This is like 2 years ago. Just like, oh, Zoe Saldana just said that she interesting.
Yeah.
You can do things that with older, our older relatives.
I love what you said about how, you know, this movie is important and there are so many great, wonderful things about it. And, you know, and I was having you know, I talked with my friend about it yesterday, who is Latina, and she loved it. And she was like, I just, you know, this is such a good thing for us. And it's like, I don't want to undermine that. I don't want to undermine that, but it's just, I feel like I just keep seeing this again and again. And, you know, going back to like Gina Rodriguez and all the controversy about her, and like, I think she had a Latina luncheon and didn't invite any Afro-Latinas. And
yes, she said many of things about, like, when we're trying to get something as Black folks, she'll be like, well, what about us? I think when we were doing Black Panther, she was like, you know, like, and because you know what it is though, Julia, is that we have to remind her, anti-Blackness is not just something for white people. Right. Anti-Blackness can, and even Black people can have anti-Blackness, right? And so it's a deprogramming that everyone needs to experience. And I also want to point out, how many dark-skinned folks have you ever seen on Univision? To the point where I don't even, and so you have a community of the Afro-Latino folks who just are constantly being erased from the conversation. And in fact, one of the actresses was saying, you know, we made a very, like, the writers and the producers and everyone and the choreographer made a really great point to make sure that we wanted to represent, you know, the community. So we made sure, like, in the background and the dancers, it was just very diverse. Like,
in the background.
What do you, in the background? Like, we're constantly, like, darker skinned folks are constantly relegated to the background. And I will attest, absolutely, the background looked like Washington Heights, but the foreground, and it just like, and it's interesting, if you just kept Vanessa the way that she was on Broadway, there are just certain things that too, like the characters, like the three hairdressers or the salon ladies really pop on Broadway, and in the movie they just, to me, their characters didn't really just like shine as much. I will say that the pool scene is like off the chains. Like, I thought number was like legendary, and I still think, and I don't want to take away that it is a really, I think it's a really great movie musical, as someone who's seen it. It just was disheartening for the entire time. I couldn't shake off of like, oh, especially if I was Afro-Latino. Aneke just found out she's Afro-Latino. You're feeling like your full story is not represented. And I feel like it's a community that is constantly just not getting their just due and their representation.
Yeah. And I, the line that I thought, oh my gosh, this is so audacious in a way, was the abuela said, little details that tell the world we are not invisible. And yet, by and large, the Afro-Latino community is still struggling to be visible. It's like still not, you know, the poster child for Latin descent.
Yeah. Yep. Absolutely. It's just like a part of the community, a part of that Latinidad diaspora and getting that representation. So I think, and it's, again, I don't want to take away from the experience of what it is, but I think it's important to like understand the full picture. You can still love this, the movie In the Heights, and see its shortcomings, you know,
You can,
you know, it's important. Like, same thing. If you're going to listen to Michael Jackson music, you better watch that documentary. You better get that full story. You guys are taking the full story of things. Like, I'm all for it, but I don't like this, like, blind side thing. But I do understand, because I remember what it was like watching Black Panther, and I'm sure, like, a lot of folks in the Latinx community are having that experience. But also know that people within your community who are also, like, Afro-Latino are having their experience and see that as well, that's like still a shortcoming of where things are. So Lin-Manuel Miranda did say, hey, I'm listening. It took a few tweets and a few dodged interviews from this writer, The Root, which you don't dodge The Root, like you go talk to The Root. He was, you know, I'm listening, I fell short. But it's just, again, sad. It's like, dude, you were on set. You were in those casting rooms, and this is how sickening colorism is. They just something, and this is the deprogramming that everyone needs to do, is they just saw, like, those lighter skinned actresses had an advantage, just because this is how the system is. And there are producers, there were Hollywood, who I think was also pushing and urging for that. And you just have to, I don't know, make a sequel to In the Heights and do it better, do it right. Well, you know what we're going to do, since In the Heights didn't properly do justice to the Afro-Latino community, we are going to celebrate the Afro-Latino community with 8 Afro-Latinos that you should know about, and we're going to celebrate.
Oh, so exciting.
In the real Washington Heights. Did I get the part? Take note, Lin-Manuel.
Welcome back to Fireside Chat on KMAX. With me in studio to take your calls is the dopest duo on the West Coast, Oliver Wong and Morgan Rhodes. Go ahead, caller.
Hey, I'm looking for a music podcast that's insightful and thoughtful, but like also helps me discover artists and albums that I've never heard of.
Yeah, man. Sounds like you need to listen to Heat Rocks every week. Myself, and I'm Morgan Rhodes, and my co-host here, Oliver Wong, talk to influential guests about a canonical album that has changed their lives.
Guests like Moby, Open Mike Eagle, talk about albums by Prince, Joni Mitchell, and so much more.
Yo, what's that show called again?
Heat Rocks, deep dives into hot records.
Every Thursday on Maximum Fun.
So, I wanted to celebrate, since In the Heights didn't, I wanted to spend some time celebrating Afro-Latinos, because they're more than you think and would even know. Sometimes you just like classify, oh, that's just a Latinx person, or that's just a Black person. No, they are in this own world and history and lane, and they're both. They have both lineages and histories and cultures. They belong in both, footing in both, make space. Let's go. So the presence of Spanish-speaking Africans in North America goes all the way back to the 16th century. So Afro-Latinos have been a part of the United States for centuries, and they're not getting their recognition. I will even say, even in the Black community, we also need to do better, too, about, you know, making space for these folks, too. And Afro-Latinos were around even before the founding of the United States. So they were throughout South America, the Caribbean, like I said, in places that we know now as like California, New Mexico, Arizona, Texas. You know, there are records of Spanish-speaking Black Latinos before the arrival of even English settlers. So done, been here. And then even among the earliest non-Indigenous residents of California, there were hundreds of people of African backgrounds who descended from slaves taken to Mexico during the 15th and 16th century. They blazed trails, they established their own towns and their ranches, and in some spaces they had more freedoms than non-Afro-Latino Black folks. So they were able to kind of get ahead of the game, get their freedom in some ways that, you know, Black slaves weren't able to. Slavery is weird, terrible, complicated, weird. It's all just skin. We're all just made up. This caste system, it's all made up. So the African and Afro-Latino diaspora, it's, you know, contributed to much of our culture here in American society, and their marks are just everywhere. And it's in music, it's in salsa, reggaeton, you know, all kinds of different tango. The tango is rooted in Afro-Latino. Of course, it's got a dope beat. When Aneke did a deep dive into the history of, like, world, the black, that there are Black people in Argentina, we found that there used to be Black people in Argentina. Go back and listen to that episode, Corny Kids, if you missed it, and you'll understand why there are very few Black people left in Argentina. But it's got a dope beat. It's that tango. You know who's hitting it. All right. That's the table. We've set it. Julie, are you ready for your first Afro-Latino that we're going to celebrate? Ooh, you're going to be so excited. It's almost like I picked this one for you. I think you're going to be tickled pink by this. This is right in the Julia wheelhouse because of your favorite genre of television. Our first one, you're like, who is it? And Gossip Girl. No. Wilson Cruz from My So-Called Life. He played... who also is my husband. I played a game of MASH with podcast host Janet Varney on the JV Club, and we played MASH, and Wilson Cruz, I won him. It was between him, The Rock, and Chris Hemsworth, and whatever the MASH gods say goes. I feel like instead of going to see, like, I don't know, like a fortune teller or a psychic or a therapist, you should just be like, oh, I have an appointment with my MASH, my MASH therapist. They're like, okay, yes. And then they just go through it and you pay like hundreds of dollars and they're just like, oh, you've got to see my MASH therapist. She's so good. My MASH psychic. Oh, she's so good. Oh God. She said, I'm going to be married to Wilson Cruz, living in a shack. But in Barcelona, and I am the new host of America's Next Top Model, and I eat cake every day, and it doesn't affect my body. So, anyways.
Back. I love it.
Oh, God. So, in 1984, legendary. He played Enrique. Yeah. He played Enrique Ricky Vasquez, Ricky. Who was a... troubled gay Ricky. Teen.
Yeah.
Of course, we were just always troubled and gay. On My So-Called Life, which is interesting, that show only lasts 13 seasons, but it's such a huge cult hit. He was then...
Not 13 seasons.
Oh, what were you going to say? Episodes, I'm sorry.
Okay. But I was each like, where are these episodes? Like,
I know, you literally were about to get off of this call. You're like, I can't do the show right now. I gotta
watch it. Yes.
13. Because also, sidebar... Julia knew Drake before the rest of us, like plebs, even understood. You loved Degrassi so hard, so much. Only thing I knew about Degrassi was, like, you would tell me, like, what was going on. You're like, ooh, and then he got shot and he's in a wheelchair. That was Drake's character.
Yes, that was Drake's character. He ended up in a wheelchair.
I only knew it from you. You had me sold, but I was too busy acting a fool. I was like, I don't got time for this, Julia. I gotta go smoke weed in the meadow. And you're like, right behind you. Just kidding. Also, Wilson Cruz is on Noah's Ark, which is a legendary show. You know, it's still only of its kind of Black gay men living their own Sex and the City life. He's also in Star Trek Discovery. He played, and he has his Anthony Rapp plays his husband. Anthony Rapp from Rent plays his husband on the show. And he can just get it. He can just get it. Oh, and he chimed in about Colorism Gate, and he tweeted in response, he said, you know, one of the issues with having so little hashtag Latinx representation in the media is that we're disappointed when it fails to reflect every aspect and nuance of our varied and complex culture. No one movie or TV show will ever be able to convey that, which is why we need more made by more of us in the US.
Yes.
True. But they still could have cast Vanessa as an Afro-Latina and we could have not been having this conversation. So
still could have, yes.
So that's Wilson Cruz. I did not know that he was Afro-Latina to the point now where I've just been Googling, is this person Afro-Latina? Like if they're like...
Yeah, me neither.
Because it really is. It's any, as far as I know, is Julia Hardy
Afro-Latina?
It could be you. It could be me. We don't know.
Me?
Who is it? It turned out to be Aneke. Like, I mean... Okay, this one. Get out your headdresses. Celia Cruz. So... excited to celebrate Celia Cruz, especially because she is like a gay queer icon. Talked to so many little queer Latinx folks, and like she is just a huge part of their just journey. Also known as La Reina de la Salsa, or the Queen of Latin Music. Celia was known for her, you know, beautiful ostentatious outfits, and you know, she had her daring headpieces that would just be right at home in any, you know, queer gathering. I think, you know, I just right at home, right at home, see these headdresses on RuPaul's Drag Race, or maybe she copied them from the drag queens, which often happens. If it's fabulous, that's and big true. And amazing, probably came from the gay queen culture, probably from Afro-Latina gay culture is what I would say. So her career as a musician started back in Cuba in the 1950s, where she first received this name, the name La Guarachera. Oh, God. It's been a while since I've had Spanish. La Guarachera. Okay, I'm going to run at it this time. La Guarachera de Cuba. Because of her popularity in singing in guachareras. Y'all, it's been a long time since I've studied Spanish. And that was the type of music that originated in Cuba. And then in the 1960s, she was like, I got to get out of here. There's too much communism happening for me. So she was like, deuces, Castro. Because also they were trying to nationalize the music industry, which just sounds terrible. Doesn't that sound terrible? I just picture like...
That sounds so boring.
I just picture like Meghan McCain and like Donald Trump like recording music for everybody. And I don't want it. Boring. So she was like, I'm out. So then she went to Mexico, found herself in New Jersey. And then she was releasing songs that brought on many different Afro-Cuban music styles, from mambo to son, all these kind of... And she brought these sounds into the mainstream, right? Because she brought these from her culture, brought them into the mainstream. And it was her song, La Negra Tiene Tumba, that allowed the Black Latina identity to be associated with pride, power, beauty, and celebration. And that's why this is what helped launch her to becoming a household name. So Celia Cruz, you know, we celebrate you.
Yay.
Here's one that I did not know. And maybe you did, but maybe you might not know who she is. I think you'll know who she is. You'll know who she is. Gwen Ifill. Remember Gwen?
Gwen Ifill. I'm like Googling.
So, Google her. She'll pop up. So Gwen Ifill, she passed away back in 2016, but she was a news anchor, and her father was of Panamanian and Barbadian descent, and she was huge in the media. The first time that she was the first Black woman to moderate a vice presidential debate. And I remember that because it was such a big deal. Because this is like Queen Latifah ended up playing her on SNL because they didn't have any Black women at the time.
Oh, wow.
And this is not that long ago.
Mm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so I think this is actually maybe the 2008. Maybe it was like 2008 when they're like a lot of the Tina Fey, Sarah Palin stuff was going down. Yeah. And so she was one of the first Black women to host, you know, nationwide televised public affairs programs in the U.S. She paved the way for other journalists as well. She was all over the place. After her death in 2016, PBS published a piece titled Dear Gwen, Letters from Female Journalists of Color That She Inspired,
Word.
Which showed how deep her legacy was. And she said, diversity is essential to the success of the news industry, and journalists must include diverse voices in their coverage in order to reach a broader audience. We have stories to tell, but many in our audience have stopped listening because they can tell that we're not talking about that. Mic drop. She also got a college named after her in 2018, Simmons College. So go off.
Oh. Mm-hmm. Wow. Take him to school.
Yep. Take him. Okay. MJ Rodriguez. So do you watch Pose? Are you a fan of Pose?
Yes, I love Pose.
Well, you know MJ Rodriguez because she plays Blanca Rodriguez, yes. Evangelista.
I love Blanca.
Just love Blanca so much. I feel like Blanca is like everyone's mom.
Yeah, she's so good.
She has one of the distinctions of being one of the first mainstream trans Afro-Latina singer and actresses. And in 2018, she received the Hispanic Heritage Award, Special Trailblazer Award, born in Newark, New Jersey, to an African-American mother and an African-American Puerto Rican father. She said that, well, when she was seven, that she prayed to become a female since the age of seven. And then, you know, once, you know, also... Fun fact, 2019, Rodriguez played Audrey, the leading lady in the Pasadena Playhouse production of Little Shop of Horrors. Little Shop of Horrors. Mm-hmm. And became the first transgender woman of color to play that role. And at the time, she said, you know, I'm simply an actress. I think any woman should be considered for this role. My casting shouldn't be something that's trending. It should be normal. So... You know what, MJ Rodriguez, you did what needed to be done.
Yes.
Love it. So good. Again, like all these people that like I just didn't know, you know, like, you just had no idea. I mean,
yeah,
I didn't know that she was Afro-Latina.
I had a feeling that she was. I was like,
it's the same thing.
No, because it's more than just like the color, you know, there's, I don't know. I feel like there's something ineffable there, that just transmits. Right. And it's like.
They look kind of black, but they happen to be Latinx, right? They're like, they look black, but they're Latin. Yes. You know what? If you have a hunch, no, I won't say that. But no. I will say there's a lot of, I'm going to just do some honorable, don't do that.
Afro-Latina. Gotcha.
Because like because when I lived in West Harlem, everyone spoke Spanish to me.
Yeah.
And because, you know, just blended right on in. Like, you know. Okay. So this one, Arturo Schomburg, he was the Puerto Rican who made the history of African descendants known. So all of us in the Black diaspora have Arturo to thank. Wow. So he was a historian who was raised, and this is why the other thing too, like us in the Black community also need to do a better job of like making space for our Afro-Latino brothers and sisters, because I'll talk to some of them just feel when they just feel like they feel like they don't have any space in either, they don't feel like they don't have a home in either one, right? And we have to do better of making space. So on both sides. And they reportedly were inspired by a teacher who said that African descendants had no history. And he was like, fuck that. And decided to dedicate his life to showing how vital their contributions were. So if you got someone who's saying, you know, you ain't nothing, you ain't gonna be shit, get right on to work like Arturo did. And so after moving to New York, he became an important figure in the Harlem Renaissance. He joined the Revolutionary Committee of Puerto Rico and co-founded the Negro Society for Historical Research and united African, Caribbean, and African-American scholars. He was just like bringing everybody together. Why is this like the first time I'm hearing about this like badass guy? And he later served as president of the American Negro Academy, which focuses on Black history and literature. Have you heard about... I had never heard about Arturo.
No, me neither. I'm really embarrassed, but...
like, he was up in the Harlem Renaissance, like, doing things, like, helping unite, like, folks and be like, we have a history, we are doing something, you know? There is, and I'm even more embarrassed because apparently there... I used to live on 134th Street, and in 1925, he found the Negro Literature History and Prints Division of 134th Street Branch Library. Maybe it was closed by the time. It doesn't say when. It doesn't say if it was still there. So I was just walking by it. Never seen Arturo before. Arturo who? Schomburg? Never heard of him. Okay. Miriam Jimenez Roman. She was a professor and writer who taught courses on race, ethnicity, and gender at Hunter College. She taught at Hunter College, Brown, Columbia, and New York universities. She passed away in 2020, and she was listed by Latina Magazine as one of six Afro-Latinas who are changing the world in recognition for her work through expanding the Afro-Latino history and culture. She was really big on just making sure that there was visibility. She was director of Afro-Latin at Forum, which was an organization that advocates for the visibility of Latino Afro descendants in the United States. She was just like a luchadora, as she was announced in one of these articles I was reading about her, just really a trailblazer. And she used her own experience as a Black Puerto Rican to educate the world on Afro-Latinidad and to bridge the gap between the presence of African Americans and Latinos in the U.S. is a very shared histories and cultures. It just really is. And I will say this too about the colorism thing. It's like crabs in the barrel. Maybe we're kind of talking about this, but like, again, if you're taught the worst thing you can be is dark skin, then you're going to do everything you can to not be that, to try to pass.
I don't know. Every time I hear that, I just think about my grandmother, because she could pass, but chose not to. And yeah, and she married my grandfather, who was Indian and African American, and you know, they had a bunch of kids. But I love that she chose that, because I saw pictures and I was like, what? Like, how is this my grandma? But
who this white lady?
Am I adopted? No.
Who's this? Did she come with the frame? Yeah, I have some family. We went through some photos too. It was like, you know, two generations removed. We were looking at the same thing. We're like, who are these white women? They're like, those are your relatives. They're like, but they could pass, and they did a different. They were not as, I won't fall. I don't know what it was like to grow up back then. I mean, lynchings, and they were in the South and stuff. But they chose to pass, and they were like, do not marry someone or have kids with someone darker skin than you. But that was again out of a survival, aspect. So.
Yeah.
I get it.
Yeah, it was a little different. Yeah, because my grandma was in Chicago. So I feel like they had a little bit more, you know. Yeah. I don't know.
Right. I mean, but yeah. Although some of the highest concentration of sundown towns were in Illinois. So I guess just like don't.
That is true.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That is true.
Really wild. Mm. So I look at all these states y'all were doing. Everyone was doing something. Oregon, white utopia. Yes. I see you. Okay, two more. Felipe Luciano, he was the founder of the Young Lords of New York branch, which was a Puerto Rican activist group started in Chicago. Hey, maybe your grandma was up hanging out with Felipe.
Yeah.
It was a civil rights activist group started in Chicago and New York City, and their mission was the same as Black Panthers. They were revolutionaries. And now I'm starting to piece together, like, I remember hearing about the Young Lords. There was a movie recently, I think it was like in Judas and the Black Messiah, because he was trying to unite a lot of the organizations and the groups, and the Young Lords was one of them.
Yeah.
And the Young Lords was indisputably the main catalyst for the second U.S.-based Boricua generation's baptism into radical politics. So this was like really getting folks really fired up. Mm. And Luciano focused on the liberation of oppressed communities. He also grew up, you know, underprivileged to a single mother. And even though, you know, there were struggles, he was just determined enough to go to college and to pursue an education. He got involved in student activism on campus. And it's what led to the creation of the Young Lords. And to him joining the original Last Poets, which was a coalition of African-American and Afro-Puerto Rican poets. So go off, Felipe.
Wow.
Okay. So. Last one. And this is a really recent one. So I just want to celebrate this Afro-Latino, Richie Torres, who is the first openly gay Afro-Latino U.S. congressman. So bring it home for Pride Month for his community. 32. So what am I doing with my life? You got me. He can also be a husband. That's fine. I will be his Michelle Obama. I'll write books and, like, you know, get the kids doing exercises, doing activities. But yeah, he's the first openly gay congressman. He is both Black and Puerto Rican. First Afro-Latino openly gay congressman. He's both Black and Puerto Rican, grew up in the Bronx, and he also made history this past year with other fellow Democrat and New Yorker Mondaire Jones, who is the first openly gay African-American congressman. So,
wow.
Wanted to throw that out there. Also, some honorable mentions of some actresses we want to take a moment to celebrate who are also Afro-Latina. Mm-hmm. Rosie Perez,
yes.
Which snaps the Rosie Perez, like, which I didn't know. I thought, now it makes sense. I'm like, okay, I get it, right? Like, again, seeing the diaspora of what, you know, the Afro-Latina diaspora is. And also snaps her because she played Renee Montoya in Birds of Prey,
who was a queer character. She was so great. I was like, she's still around. She's still going.
She's had a second renaissance because she's popping up on everything. Mm-hmm. Do the Right Thing. White Man Can't Jump. Billy.
Yeah.
Why don't you have to be taking me to the movies? Every time I need to get into, if I'm doing a character, I get, that's one of the voices, and that's the sentence I say to get into my character.
Billy,
why don't you ever take me to the movies?
Mm. Yeah.
She's just so great, and she is busting it up. And that opening to Do the Right Thing, we're gonna know. And she started off as a started off on Soul Train. Google, go on to YouTube, do yourself a treat, and do Rosie Perez Soul Train, and you would just try to not enjoy your life. Tessa Thompson as well, celebrating her, also Afro Latina. Zoe Saldana, which we have, who has apologized.
I do love her. You know, I love.
I do. Should have never played that role. Should have never. But again, like, Hollywood was like, hey, we want to do a Nina Simone piece. Who could we get? Oh, Zoe Saldana, you know, she's light skinned. And also Gina Torres.
Oh my god.
Firefly.
Yes.
Suits.
Yes. Every time I think about Gina Torres, I'm remembered of how, you know, she would go to Latino award ceremonies and it would be a surprise to reporters that she spoke Spanish, that, you know, she's completely fluent in Spanish. And I'm like, really?
Yeah.
You call yourself a reporter?
Like, yes. I feel like, again, everyone just needs to educate themselves that, like, there is a lot of Black people that speak Spanish, that speak French. Like, Black people are all over this goddamn world, yes. Folks. And we need to stop pigeonholing what folks and make space for people to identify. So, you know, it's not only pride, but it is also, we are here to also celebrate because this is also Caribbean Heritage Month. And so there's also a lot of Afro-Latinos from the Caribbean as well. So in conjunction with that, this is why we're doing this piece here. Because In the Heights didn't. We are celebrating Afro-Latinos, also it being Caribbean Heritage Month and it's pride. It's just all the things. So celebrate you all.
Hey there, beautiful people. Did you hear that good, good news?
Something about the baby Jesus?
He's coming back.
Or do you mean the fact that Apple Podcasts has named Fanti one of the best shows of 2020?
I mean, we already knew that we was hot stuff, but a little external validation never hurts, okay?
Hosted by me, writer and journalist Jared Hill.
And me, the ebony enchantress myself, Javel Anderson.
Fanti is your home for complex conversations about the gray areas in our lives, the people, places, and things we're huge fans of, but got some anti-feelings toward.
You name it, we Fanti. Nobody's off limits.
Check us out every Thursday on MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your Slayworthy audio.
Julia, Julia, Julia's Hard Rock Corner. Boom. Oh, yeah. Wow. Wow. Wow, wow. It's like,
oh, yeah.
That could be like a, like, morning radio theme.
I got the bass in the voice.
That was good.
Thank you.
And I'm turning you. Sorry, that's wrong one. I just see you thinking about Dreamgirls. I'm not going.
That's a great thing to be associated with. So, in my defense, okay.
You're not on. I do want to start this off with, you're not on trial.
In my defense.
Always a great start to a corner.
No, because, like,
in my defense.
My name's Julia, and in my defense.
Julia's defense corner. Got it.
Yes, yes. So, a little bit of background about me. I worked in reality TV for a little bit down in Los Angeles. And, you know, the shows we produced were, you know, one of them went to the Oprah's own network. And, you know, there
were
a lot of...
Can you say which one? Do you have beef with Oprah?
No, I don't. I wasn't sure if I was allowed.
Oh, you can drop names. We love the tea. Is it because you didn't get invited to the Legends Ball?
Okay. Yes. Yes. So I worked for Pink Sneakers Productions.
Also, I want to say, I don't know if you're like, I'm like, yes, but I don't know if your lawyer is like, you can't. I just want to make sure that you know I'm not your lawyer. Like, if you're like, I don't know if I can say, like, oh, you can say, James, your friend is like, oh, yeah, girl, you can tell. Yeah. I don't know what your NDA looks like.
Yeah. No, non-existent.
That was their mistake.
Yeah. Non-existent.
Suckers, I'm going on a podcast.
Oh, yeah, that's true. I don't think I signed one. Right. I remember I had to, like, scan a bunch of them. Like, I was mainly working, like, in the office. And, but, you know, I was featured in an episode. So I, you know, like, working, you know, in a production office for reality TV, like, you see that a lot of this stuff is fake and manufactured. And it was... really a turn off to me for the genre, you know,
because you and I love some reality television. We loved it.
Yes. Yeah, I know. But I feel like after college, after the Real World, I just kind of took a break. Like, I didn't jump on the Survivor, the Fear Factor, a lot of those shows, the Bachelorette. So flash forward, and, you know, I was a little... It wasn't my dream to work in reality TV. Yeah. You know, I just kind of landed there. You know, I love to write. I would love to write for scripted series. But, you know, it was good to just sort of get that experience. Yeah. And they actually do have story editors. So I was like, what are you guys doing your story editing? And like now and I know why.
Are there storyboard artists as well? They're like, okay, well, Candy will pick up a drink here and...
Right. And there was just such stage things. Like, I had to pretend one of the characters was like coming in for an interview and they did
I'm
a couple
done.
Takes,
no.
And I'm like,
no.
I'm playing.
No. Julia, look at you. Did you get your SAG card? Are you a SAG actor off of this?
No. No. No.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
It's almost I love this. It's like, it's almost like I reenactment television, but like, it's like filmed improv.
Exactly. That's a good compare. Yeah, that's a good comparison, reenactment. And there was another scene where like a character was in the phone talking to someone, but they were in the other room, but they're filming it like they're in two separate.
Oh.
Like,
oh my God. And also, I love that you said
like little things
a
like that.
Scene. Because if you and I were like,
yes,
okay, there's a, you know, documentary crew following our lives, we wouldn't be like, oh, we're doing a scene over here. We're just doing life. And I can see what you would go into that sort of production because you are a film and TV, like, you know, major. You studied sociology. To me, like, you're the studied human beings and human behavior and culture and society. So it seems like a great fit on the outside because of what you think it is. But then you get on the inside, you're just like, the emperor has no clothes. There's a man behind the curtain. I see you, Wizard of Oz. You tiny little man.
yeah but I am grateful that, you know, the companies I worked for, like, part of it was Big Vita Entertainment, which does a lot of Latino programming. So the shows I worked on, like,
any dark skin Latinos on there and Vita
Big Vita I didn't really
It holds.
No, maybe behind. Okay.
Oh, were they in the background, dancing in the background?
Yeah. I actually didn't get to witness a lot of their productions, but, you know, Fix My Choir, and there was a reality show called The Hollywood Divas, which was about all of these, like, you know, former, like, kind of black celebrities like, you know, Flex and Shanice and, yeah. So those kind of shows. And it was great. I remember like the highlight, I think, of my time there was when I was like working the phone and I saw on the caller ID salt. And it was like,
of course, you need to not say anything else. I think you, I don't think you needed to explain that for anybody. And if anybody needed to be explained, look at your life and look at your choices. Like, you could just say salt. Oh, yeah. Look, I just saw salt. I know what you're talking about. I don't think it's talking about Angelina Jolie, like, running around as her character Salt.
Right.
Or sort of cosplaying. There's only one.
Yeah. There's only one Salt. So that was very exciting. So, but overall, you know, it kind of left, you know, a bad taste in my mouth about reality because I, you know, I had seen, you know, the Wizard, the Emperor has no clothes, like you said. But, you know, being a woman in the world I live in, I have friends who are really into these shows. And one of my friends, I was visiting her earlier this year. She finally got me into The Real Housewives of
New York. Oh, now I see where your defense comes in. Bravo, Julia.
Yeah.
You took me on a ride because now I'm like, okay. It was all this to be like, I don't really like to watch these shows, but I will get down on some Real Housewives of New York. Well done.
Yeah, we might
not
yeah,
guilty. Might have to edit that, but... keep all of that. Not guilty. Not guilty is the verdict. Well done.
Not guilty. So, a little background about the show: The Real Housewives of New York is a spinoff on Bravo. The original one was Orange County, and it's just a reality show that like features these sort of fabulous women living in New York. It was first released in March of 2008, which is interesting because that came out, you know, when we were starting the Great Recession.
Oh, and right.
So seeing this,
it was
show
cheaper to produce too. Because they were like, oh, we don't need to pay for all these writers. We can just pay for that one person over there to write some lines. Because I had a friend of mine who, when we were filming something when I was working at Marvel, their boyfriend was a writer for, I think, one of the Real Housewives shows. And they were doing a reunion special. It was either it was definitely one with a lot of black women on it. And I was so curious because he was very white. And he was one of the writers for the reunion show. And I just thought that was such an interesting concept because he would just, you know, write lines for them for their reunion show. Like he was, they're like, oh, we had to film the whole entire thing with the, we're writing new scene pages for the reunion tonight. I'm like, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Not surprised. So, yeah, the show's been around since 2008, and I think there was definitely an uptick in reality programming. As you said, it was a lot cheaper. You know, that was, like, around the time of the writer's strike. So starting to branch
also,
out.
Also, sorry, I didn't mean to sidebar too much, but also Real Housewives really, because every TV show that has a reality show has its actual carbon copy. Like, Real Housewives came out of Desperate Housewives. Like, they were like... How can we
do?
Yeah.
Yes. A scripted show.
What is it? Not the OC, but the like Laguna Beach was out of the OC, The Hills or whatever. Yes. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Good points. Good points. So this spinoff, you know, flashing forward to March 2020. We're having a new season, and this is the first season where they have an African-American housewife. And I use the term housewife with quotes because one was married, except for one character. And now it's like everyone's divorced, and Ebony K. Williams is the newest housewife. She's actually like...
She's black, right?
She is black, yes.
Ebony okay, great. I just want to make sure there's not some white girl named Ebony.
And her and I are almost the same age. Like,
okay.
Before me. So I got invested. I was watching this with my friend. And basically how the season starts, you know, it shows March 2020. And it shows like bustling New York. And then it flash forwards to October 1st, 2020, where everything is shut down. People are wearing masks. So this is definitely going to be a season that talks about COVID, and you kind of see how some of the characters have been affected financially. And one of the characters, Leah, she's a younger housewife. I think she's like around my age too. She introduces Ebony to the group. So how it works is when they have a new housewife, they make it seem like, oh, this is my friend. I want you to meet my friends. And then all
oh my God. Together. I didn't know that's how it happened. Now it's like, okay, because I hear different scuttlebutt of it because I know that like, okay. So I know that different like women audition to be in the housewives and that never made sense to me because I'm like, but they're friends. Isn't this just like a group of friends? Like that's how like Denise Richards ends up being in one of the housewives shows or whatnot. And there's like different people that get denied being in the housewives, but I just thought that was so weird. Cause I'm like, I thought they were just friends, but of course they're auditioning. And of course, and when, oh, this is 2020. Okay. So they were ahead of the, they were ahead of like the racial reckoning when they're bringing this black woman. Is this a response? They were like, oh, we better get a black woman.
Right. They took a little break because they usually film in March.
Okay.
So, you know, the pandemic kind of affected everything. And I think that when you first see Ebony, she is just like decked out head to toe in Black Lives Matter gear. You know, she's wearing like a face mask with like the fist, like bejeweled, like very glamorous. And she's wearing a black hoodie with, you know, Yusuf, Kevin, Antron, Corey, and Raymond. So I'm like, okay, like they are just go like jumping right into this. Like she is there and she is black and she is proud. And, she's a great addition to this show. Just a little stats about her. So she is a self-proclaimed multi-hyphenate. She is a lawyer. She went to Howard. She was in the AKA sorority.
Okay.
She was a broadcaster for Fox News. And she actually received death threats for criticizing Trump's cowardly and dangerous comments about Charlottesville. And she had to like start being like escorted to the studio. And she's also like fucking gorgeous. Like she, I was just like, hello, like,
yeah,
yeah. Wow. She wears this fabulous like peacock eyeshadow. She's great.
But, and also like, this is like so wild. Cause like, she's such a trailblazer and that, correct me if I'm wrong. I don't know how much, you know, we'll have to look into your defense and see what is in your defense notes. But I feel like the housewife shows are pretty segregated that like there's the Housewives of Atlanta is where all the black ones are. Mm-hmm. And that I don't know if there are other like black ones in the OC or Dallas. So I don't know where they are. Like Portland, the Real Housewives of Portland. Denver. I feel like they're pretty segregated and it seems like she's the first one cracking that glass ceiling, which is so wild that that's even a thing.
Right.
In 2020.
Right. I mean, for New York, I can't speak to a lot of the other shows and spinoffs. I know they have had, you know, Asian American housewives in I think in Beverly Hills and in Austin. But that was, you know, a lot of my beef with this show. And, you know, my ex-in-laws and like other people would say like, oh, do you watch Real Housewives? And like, I want to say like, no, because it's like super heteronormative, like very white male. Like, I don't know. It's just like the language I hear these women. Cause like, of course I had to do research and start from the beginning. So,
right.
So
yes,
I was watching 2008 and it's just like very, just like high class, but like also like a lot of like, in women fighting and sexist comments and homophobic comments. And I'm like, ugh. But now, you know, they're trying to be more woke. So Ebony, I feel like unfortunately is becoming like the default educator. Like in the most recent episode, one of the characters was like, oh no, you have to teach us. You have to teach us like these things. And it's like, actually, it's not my job to educate you on black culture.
It is 2021, 2020. Like you had your, like that you've got a hand computer called an iPhone in your hand that you can click clack away and figure it out yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, it's been coming up and I think it is, you know, I like watching these first in reality TV. Like I watched the first Black Bachelorette. That was really fun. but
Rachel Lindsay. Did I get it right? See, I'd be knowing things. Rachel, I'd be picking up.
We were on a first name basis. I'm like, Rachel.
Okay. Yeah.
But yes, I just want to believe sure. Lindsay. Yeah. Rachel Lindsay. So I watched that. That was kind of fun. And so for this show, they each have these like promos, like when they introduce the characters, they all have a quote.
They're like, my name is Susanna and I'm a bad bitch.
Yes. So
I only know this because of 30 Rock. Tracy Jordan's wife, she's like, my name is, you know, Tiffany Jordan. Everybody likes the way I say ham. And
yes, their reality show. That was so good. But guess what Ebony's intro is?
Let me guess. She turns around and she's like, I'm Ebony. I'm black, feisty, and Black Lives Matter. And this is all my real hair.
And that did come. Yeah, the hair did come up.
Okay, give me hers. Give it to me. I want to hear.
Okay, I'm going to try and impersonate her.
Okay. Yeah, do her.
I had to work twice as hard for half as much, and now I'm coming for everything.
You know what I just realized? The writers for this show are white. Because they heard someone say that in their Zoom breakout session for their job when they had their DEI person come in and someone in their group said, oh, you know, when you're black, you have to work twice as hard to get half as much. They were like, oh, yeah? Tell me more. writing it down.
Yeah.
There's no way if there was a black writer and just the only black person come in there, we would have approached it in a different way. Mm-hmm. I had to work twice hard to get half as much, and I'm coming for, okay.
And I'm coming for everything. Yeah.
I do want that to be, I'm going to go into every Zoom work meeting now and just say that. I'm head of DEI, so that's what I'll do. Hey, everybody, my name is James. I had to work twice as hard to get half as much, and I'm coming for everything.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. So it's, you know, it's great. I honestly like watching, especially after this past week's episode, which, you know, I'll get into in a second. That is a really hard position to be in, you know, and
Teacher of white people.
Well, just the fact that like, she knows she's the first black person on this show. She's going into these like white spaces and, you know, she's supposed to be forming these like friendships with all of these white women. And, you know, I grew up pretty much being the only black person in my school. It wasn't until I got to college and I was like, hi, James. Like,
hey, Julia. Yeah. And there we were, thick as thieves.
Yeah. So it definitely like comes out like in the first episode, before she meets them, she's with her friend and she's like, how are they going to react to me? Like kind of like trying to feel out that space. You know, she's from Tribeca. You know, she's buying... on the show, she's buying a house in Harlem and all these other women are pretty much Upper East Side, have houses in the Hamptons, and just have this long history in reality TV of just being very nasty and backstabbing and getting way too drunk. So all the stuff you would expect from a show like that. So now, you know, we're adding this layer on and I've been noticing some backlash, like, and I'm kind of divided about this. I'm kind of divided because in one of the last episodes, she was called, someone said, oh, Ebony, like, why are you being so angry? That is a trigger word.
Of course.
Yes.
Yeah.
That is, you know. And
was she being angry or just being passionate or just, you know,
I didn't even think she was being angry.
Oh, okay. And then yes, this was
like,
racism.
Yes. So they're all sitting at
this was a microaggression.
Yeah. They're all sitting at a table. Ebony's closest friend, like Leah, stands up, is like, you're a hoe. You're all a bunch of hoes. And everyone's like, Leah, what's wrong? Come sit down, sweetie. And Leah storms off And then like the rest of the girls are talking about like why Leah curses. And one of them's like, oh, I think, you know, it's like, well, we just, you know, we're educated, so we don't curse as much. And Ebony is like, no, I have more education than any of you and I curse. And then the other one was like, how dare you? I'm educated, and like started jumping on her. And then Ebony was like, I did not say that. I did not say that, you know, and it wasn't angry. I didn't think it was angry at all.
Wait, no one said Leah, who called everybody a hoe.
Yeah.
No one was like, Leah, why are you so angry? She seemed pretty angry and she was swearing from what I imagine.
Yes.
No one used the angry word with her.
No.
But then Ebony got labeled.
Was just defending that she was like, I wasn't trying to say that you're uneducated. Ebony is just so poised and must have so much patience.
She has to.
Yeah.
She is. But you know what? Living up to her thing when you first meet her, she had to work twice as hard to get half as much. So you know what? I'm not mad at it because every scene, Ebony is living up to the catchphrase.
Yes.
She did what needed to be done. Tens across the board, Ebony.
Yeah. And she does. She has a lot of great quotes. But I feel like sometimes I'm wondering with these writers, like how much pressure they are putting on her to bring up these issues of race and that whole, you know, because it's there is a lot of inauthenticity. And later she goes back to her friend and she says, Luann called me an angry Black woman. And that was not a direct quote. You know, she said, why are you being so angry? But still, as we said, it is.
Right, like that's how she is.
Yeah,
I mean, yeah, that's, you can fill in the blank. Like, why are you, Black woman, being so angry?
Right,
is what the subtext is. Yeah,
right. And you know, so I've been looking into background on things that have been happening on the show, and there is another character, Heather Thompson, who like is just like, she has a podcast, and I guess she's like chomping at the bit to be like the white savior kind of peacekeeper. And she says, oh yeah, I worked in Black culture a lot. You know, I worked for Puff Daddy for a number of years. So I'm really familiar. Oh. So I'm basically saying like, I'm down on camera. I have Black friends. Yes. Yes. Puff Daddy. He is just the pulse of Black America.
He is a rich ass Black man.
Yeah.
Oh, is she friends with Kanye West? is she friends with Kanye West too?
Yeah.
What? Like, come on.
Yeah.
Rich ass Black man who does not know what the average Black person is probably still experiencing.
Exactly. Exactly. So she says that and she's like talking to Ebony. And as she's leaving, she turns to Ebony and says, you know, you are so articulate.
No, I'm dying. I'm dying. And is this when you decided you were never going to watch the show again? Because you've taken me on a journey. I was interested. And then 2 minutes later, 3 microaggressions later, I'm done.
Yeah.
Get Ebony out. Can we start a petition?
I know. I'm like, run, Ebony. Yeah.
Get out of there. Get out. Watch the movie. Hashtag Ebony Get Out.
Yes.
This is the sequel of Get Out, and she's in it. Because she's probably surrounded by white cameramen. This sounds like a nightmare.
Yeah.
This is my personal hell.
Like, yeah.
And I feel like she probably feels like, you know, wanting to do this is like, you know, her avenue to like, you know, she probably had the fame bug. Absolutely. And no shame or shade about that. We live in a culture that glorifies that. Like, she's literally a duchess. If you know, this is, celebrity is our dukes and duchess, right? Especially, you know, reality television. So she's been inducted into it. And she's like, okay, I can use this as a platform and be like the first. But like, I don't know if it is worth it. Like, your mental health, girl, like generational trauma is real. That is a lot.
Yeah. And a couple more things I wanted to say about Ebony is she now hosts a podcast called Revolt Black News. I don't know if you've heard it. And I guess she started another one, Holding Court with Ebony K. Williams. So she's really like coming up, like really trying to make a name, like brand herself. And I feel like of anyone who could be the first Black housewife, she was a great choice. You know, I'm sure working at Fox and receiving death threats and things like that have kind of prepared her a little bit for these women. But they can just be so vicious.
And they can't handle her. Like, she is, like, I don't want to bring the colorism scale back in, but, like, I mean, she is a very sort of, you know, light-skinned black woman, very straight hair.
Very, like, straight, know, hair. And I got a little mad at, yeah, like, one of the comments she made about that. But
she used the word nappy or something.
No, well, she used the good word hair. She used the word texture. And I mean, you know, I know, obviously, like, I'm not gonna sit
everyone
here
has their
with
journey,
like, my hair all, like, not natural. And, like,
sure, yeah.
There is a lot of pressure, but... and I'm sure, especially, like, yes, being a very successful black woman to, you know, appear a certain way. She brought, like, a hair and makeup person with her on this, like, weekend trip in the Hamptons, and they were trying to rush her, and she's like, my hair is a different texture, so it takes a while. And, like, my initial reaction was like, well, you know, or you can just wear it natural. But I gotta be like, there's this so much pressure. There's so much pressure on her.
One of these housewives looks, oh, that's Leah. Sorry, now I'm Googling. I thought that was Nicole Kidman, but it's Leah McSweeney from The Housewives.
Yes, Leah. So Leah was the...
You a hoe.
I love Leah. I love Leah. Like, she calls the women out. Like, she, like, was calls throwing, like, tiki torches because she's like...
Okay. But see, that is also behavior that our, you know, BAP could not do. Like,
exactly.
She can't. Ebony can't do that. She can't be acting a fool like
and
that.
And I feel like people are, like, waiting. And so one of the things I saw was that the woman who called her articulate is now agreeing with people saying, like, oh, yeah, calling her a race baiter. And...
This sounds like a nightmare. I would, yeah. I can't. I'm out.
I know.
They need a D. They need, like, what? They need some DEI up there. I don't know. Get out, Leah. Not Leah. Leah, you stay there. Call the one.
Leah, you stay there. Call them all out.
All right, that's our show. Thank you all so much. No fact check. We got to get on out of here. Everything we said was perfect, but if it wasn't, you can always tweet at us. Hit us up on social medias at Minority Corner on Twitter or Instagram, or shoot us an email at minoritycorner@gmail.com. Big thanks to our editor, Sarah Brown, our production coordinator, Lori Fowler. Julia, thank you for being on the show today. And thank you to all of our Maximum Fun members. We can't do the show without you. And thank you to everybody for listening to Minority Corner, because together, we're the majority. Happy Juneteenth, y'all.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.